On this episode of ITAV, securing your IoT devices when someone in your house or someone in your company is no longer there. Also talking about WPA3 security and what it will mean for your company. All that and more next on the ITAV show.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is the ITAV show, episode 19, recorded Friday, June 29th, 2018. Isolate.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by Utelligy.
This is the ITAV show, the monthly look at how the IT and the AV kind of come together and impact your network and what we can do to help with that. My name is Malbright. I am your host. With us to discuss all things ITAV, first and foremost, our regular on this, Mr. Michael Drainer from Drainer Technologies. Welcome, sir.
Welcome. Thank you for having me today. It's a pleasure.
Also with us, technically my boss, his name is Bradford Ben. He is the indispensable industry icon. How are you, sir?
Doing well, thank you. Although I will say I like the new digs you've set up for the background there. I think they're very nice. I can't wait for the viewers to see the new studio you have.
Yeah. It's been here for, I guess, about a month or so. So, and last but not least, Mr. Paul Harris from Aurora Multimedia. Welcome, sir.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. So here's the thing. We've got a couple things going on here. We've got Wi-Fi and we've got leaks. First, though, I want to hit with this, and we're using a story from the New York Times about thermostats and honestly, IoT devices being used in domestic abuse. And not that we're taking that lightly. It's actually a very serious subject. And the Times story goes into it. She starts out with one individual who had a relationship that had ended, and quote from the Times article: one woman had turned off her air conditioner, but said that it was then switched on. Had turned on her air conditioner; it had been switched off without her touching it. Another said the code numbers of the digital lock at her front door changed every day, and she couldn't figure out why. What had happened, and what was happening, and what we want to talk about here is these individuals were experiencing separations of relationships. The people that they were separating from were using the IoT devices in the house to get back at them, to harass them, to do other things. And I want to start on this very delicately because it is, domestic abuse and things of that nature and harassment are very serious. But both from a residential AV standpoint and a commercial AV standpoint, and I'll get to why that in a second, what can we do to mitigate this risk? Because it is a risk. Bradford, I'm going to start with you. From the residential side, the Times article makes very clear what some of the issues are and what some of the vulnerabilities are. From the commercial, though, what I see is disgruntled employees, people that you let go, that have access to all sorts of different codes. And I'm not just talking about the keys to the servers. I'm talking about a number of IoT devices that are continuing to be included and introduced into the corporate environment that these folks may very well have the keys to that you don't realize. So what can we do as both from the IT side and the AV side as we start deploying these things to protect our clients?
So the first thing I think we can do, and I posted this a little earlier on Twitter, something if I had the skills I would volunteer to do, but the Resi people from Cedia, the Avixa people, to go in and partner with some of these shelters for stalked and abused women and men and say, look, I'm an IT person. I deal with IoT. Let me resecure your system and make you safe again. Because that's typically the biggest leak is that no one knows how to update the system. And I do think that's something that we as an industry can embrace. You know, if Tim goes and spends an hour of his time redoing all the passwords on someone's house to make them safer, I know as his boss, I would pay him that time to go do that. It's a community service. And as Cedia members, it's a great way to build new customer. But it's also a better thing just to do for the community. Now, as to how can we avoid some of this stuff, At home, there are multiple ways to do it with various logins and all this stuff, but unless you're me or Drainer, you're not going to do any of that. At work, the better way is to use, there are different directory and management tools to use, so that when you let someone go, you can either use a Microsoft Active Directory, you can use Linux users, you can use Mac users. And then there are features such as LDAP, which you're going to ask me what it stands for, but basically it's a protocol that lets you verify what a user is and its access level. And by insisting on those things when you're installing new IoT things is important, because now when someone goes in and disables the keys to the server, if that authentication back through Windows Active Directory says, hey, is this person allowed to adjust the thermostat? And it goes, this person's an inactive user. It automatically gets cut off. So that is just part of the integration process. Now, here's where it becomes a challenge. How many corporate companies are going to want to have the thermostats on their business LAN to get the authentication? And the answer is not many.
Yeah.
And but there are ways to address that by having update tools so that your directory gets pushed out to the edge once a day, once every 8 hours, so that that access gets denied. The other thing, and this is something that seems amazingly simple, but I recommend everyone do this, keep track of what IoT things you have as a company or as a person, and make sure you've turned off all of that. It's a whole lot of housekeeping. This is some of the reasons why a lot of the companies are going to cloud services, so that you can go in and address it. I know here where I work, it's an Active Directory, and they go in and they check the box. When they check that box and they say, my cube is in this building, all of a sudden my badge works in that building but doesn't work elsewhere that isn't associated with my job, because I'm not in that user group.
Yeah.
So all of those same rules follow through, and that's typically the best way for a business to handle it, is to set the rules up like you would any other access and just treat it as another flag. And when people go, that's difficult, I go, here's the number of my favorite programmer, not Matt, here's the number of my favorite programmer. And this is the work you want to have done. And I think that's the best thing we can do as AV, IT, and just serving the community, is making people aware of it. I'll be the first to admit, I'm not going to be a security expert. I'm pretty smart, but I'm not a security expert. But I can tell
he's humble too.
Actually, I'm going to bring Paul in on this, because Paul, as a small business owner, but also Paul's company, Aurora, just released their own control system. Is this something that you guys can do from a control system where you can, like Redford said, you know, access Active Directory or Linux users or something like that, to say, okay, here is the group, here is the bubble that the IoT lives, and we can adjust and constrain the users, and then that is connected directly to a list of authorized users, or is it a little bit more heavy lifting than that?
Well, it can be done. The biggest problem at the end of the day, and this is the way I look at it, because I go as technological as we are in this company, I like to keep things personally simple, stupid. I'm the type of person who, even when you have a TV, just give me a regular IR remote and I'm happy as anything. So that's usually my personal preference. When it comes to these type of things, I personally don't like it on the AV network in general. I like to just keep everything locked down and then join it into the corporate network, where they can control the pipeline into anything that might get outside of the corporate network, so things can be quickly monitored and shut down. Usually the best way to control these type of things is from the network switch itself and the accessibility to the outside world. So let's say, for example, you have a disgruntled employee. Mm-hmm. Well, he shouldn't have any access at all to the AV system, period, even through the outside world. I mean, that in itself is a huge vulnerability. I don't care what company you are, to give just normal everyday day-to-day without VPNing in or doing something to gain that access into the world for remote support for any reason. So right off the bat, no one should be allowed that access to begin with. I like to segment and isolate the AV systems from it. I think one of the biggest issues that happened with this AV over IP surge is everybody automatically assumes it has to be on the customer's network. And it's always, well, the customer wants to put it on their network. But the reality of it is a difference between using the cabling that's already inside the infrastructure and routing it to an independent network switch that can then be, you know, tethered over to the other switch that's part of that corporate network where they have a lot more control over that pipeline that's going through it versus you know, what they're normally, you know, doing. So I, me personally, I like to just have it where it's its own network itself and then just limit it. The nice thing about that is it gives also more accessibility to the dealers and what they can do and their support and their service, which they tend to lose from that. But these controls for the facilities and controlling all the environmental devices and all these things that can get people into trouble, they've been around all these years, just in different capacities.
They've typically been cordoned off, which is kind of what it sounds like you're going to, is the old debate. And it's not that old, but it's still an old debate of where do you put AV, where do you put environmental, where do you put control in the overarching of the network architecture.
Exactly. And it should be, with hands down, it should be segmented, because you got to give, people forget that you got to, the network switch really has just become the new matrix. That's all it really is.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got to treat it as such and then still keep it a segmented system that can have hooks into the other system. So I'm a firm believer of that. You get into nothing but trouble when you don't have the access to look at what's really going on, and then it becomes a he said, she said type of scenario. But if you look at it, let's take, for example, something as simple as lighting control. Well, lighting control over the network is nothing new. The IT, you know, AV people have been doing it for years and years, but yet, here we are. Sorry about the noises in the background. My computer just likes to ding away. So it's been around, and yet anybody at any time could have gone in and made somebody's life miserable in a presentation and turned off all the lights on somebody. For example, if mine were hooked in right now, they could be turning off the lights on me right now if they just had an issue. So whether it's a thermostat, whether it's a lock, whether it's a lighting, these have been in there for years. So if you really look at the statistics of how often it's been abused, it's almost minuscule. And plus, people do realize these days they are taking a very big risk at actually intruding on somebody. As smart as everybody likes to think they are, there's somebody smarter out there to know how to find where it came from. So yeah, you can get clever. You can jump proxy servers. You can, at the end of the day, if somebody's doing something really nasty, you can still track it down and find things out. And I mean, I don't want to go into the whole, you know, espionage, like, you know, where how we track people down and the whole thing. But at the end of the day, people really, and you got to be really damn good to hide yourself. And I'm an engineer. And look, if I want something, I'll take it. It's that simple. That's how engineers think. That's how we are. We just, like we can engineer, we can backward engineer. But even as clever as I am, there's someone more clever out there than I am, and they'll find a way to figure out how I did it. And that's what people really should be concerned about more than anything, is at some point or another, especially in this electronic age, you do get caught at some point.
Absolutely. Michael, from a consulting standpoint and rolling out standpoint, how are you advising your customers when it comes to rolling out? Is it, to Paul's point, you know, segment everything and connect those things that need to be connected or put it all in one big pool?
So there's two issues at play here. One, Paul's very right in as far as a physical network security perspective and securing devices, isolation is definitely a good thing. But that's becoming less and less feasible as we have more cloud-controlled devices. So even though we can keep them isolated on the physical LAN, you still have remote accessibility as long as that device has access to the internet. And there's a lot of devices today that just flat out don't function without their cloud-hosted services available to them. Whether it's even from like a network switch to APs down to thermostats and light controls. So yeah, we can kind of control the local domain, but that doesn't stop someone from going online and trying to take over that device and wreak havoc for a battered woman who just kicked out her husband from her home, and she's got her home automation system, but she's got cloud-controlled lights, right? And the dude's flipping the lights up and off and on her at night. And I think that's kind of what the spirit of this article was, is that technology, holding someone's technology hostage. I kind of like where Bradford was going with this, almost a managed service provider of sorts for residential and commercial IoT devices, because IoT, Internet of Things, it requires internet to work. So even though we can isolate things from a control standpoint locally, those devices still have to have those cloud services. Now, in the spirit of helping people manage that process, a lot of manufacturers and vendors have gone to like single sign-on services, and it's all tied to your personal email accounts, Google authentication, Facebook authentication, and whatnot. And that's great if you're a single person in your own environment. But when you have multiple people working in an environment, that becomes an issue. And we've run into that with tablets in corporate spaces. We've run into it in houses of worship where you've got let's say an iPad, right? Whose account does that iPad go on? Whose iTunes account does that go on, right? So now you get into this whole process of, all right, well, I bought an Ecobee thermostat. Well, I'm just going to tie it to my account. Well, wait a minute. It's in our corporate office. That shouldn't be tied to my personal account, right? That should be tied to a corporate account that somebody higher than me that has equity interest in the company has administrative rights to. So, you know, it's a very complex issue when we're talking about the use of personal targeted IoT devices in commercial corporate spaces. And we're seeing more and more of that coming to the forefront. So it's really a policy thing more than anything else, combined with physical layer security and making sure that if a device does get compromised from a hacking standpoint, that it can't infiltrate other parts of the network, but that doesn't stop a would-be perpetrator from taking control of that device.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's move on here to our next story.
Actually, Tim, could I just bring up one, sorry to do this. I should actually bring up one interesting point about what Michael said when he was talking about it, and I agree with a lot of the things he says, but there is one important point to bring here. With all these devices coming out that have the accessibility into the cloud or require the cloud to do what they do, and this is one of the things that I preach a lot, where people have lost sight of what is commercial and what is residential.
And I don't think they lost sight of it, Paul. I don't think they care anymore.
Well, but that's the point. When you don't care anymore, you lost sight of it, in essence. But this is the point that I've been preaching and trying to fight for a long time. Commercial industry needs to get back to commercial and focus on why we are what we are.
That genie has gotten out of the bottle, sir.
We're at least trying. At least as a company, we're trying to fix that. But that's the difference between, for those manufacturers out there, and this is more of a call out, you want to get back to commercial grade with these issues that you're talking about on the show. Here's the bottom line. If you're going to make a product for a corporation, now the residential, that's obviously a totally different topic. But for the commercial world, no one should be speccing in a product that leaves you vulnerable where it has to go out to the cloud in order to service itself. That in itself creates products that should become available or modes of operation where it eliminates the cloud. Bottom line is, I know right now there's certain companies out there touting the cloud in this space, but the bottom line is the cloud comes with this problem, and that's why we actually don't try to go towards the cloud. It is dangerous. It does come with problems. It does make it easier to be hacked. You do lose control over things, and that's not good in a corporate environment. Residential, the consequences, other than the domestic abuse, which is serious, but the consequences of somebody just something annoying, they might scare somebody, they might do something in a non-spousal abuse area, but that's the worst that they'll do to them, is make them a little miserable for a little bit of time. But in a corporate environment, making somebody miserable is loss of money, loss of revenue, perception. It's a lot of other things. So what I'm getting at is, there's a reason why sometimes people buy a commercial grade display and a non-commercial grade display. There's a reason why someone should buy, let's say, a commercial grade thermostat that is not cloud, and a residential that is cloud. Two different environments, and this is where the delineations do need to start. So what I'm saying out there is, the manufacturers should really step up and make commercial grade products that solve these problems and get off this cloud kick, that it's going to make things so much better. I really don't think in the commercial world it makes things better. I think in some cases, based on the applications that tie themselves into real world, can make things worse.
Yeah, then there are some folks that are working on that. There are absolutely some cloud instances that are secure. You've got people that are on Office 365 and other, you know, software that does work. As far as devices connected to the cloud, we can debate that at another time. I do want to move on to the next story here. It'll probably be our last one, to be honest with you guys. The WPA3 Wi-Fi security protocol is launching actually as of June 25th. We're recording this on the 28th. The Wi-Fi Alliance officially introduced the certification for the next generation of Wi-Fi, known as Wi-Fi Certified WPA3. One piece from this, quote-unquote, WPA3 Enterprise offers the equivalent of 192-bit cryptographic strength, providing additional protections for networks transmitting sensitive data, such as government or finance. The 192-bit security suite ensures a consistent combination of cryptographic tools that are deployed across the WPA3 networks. Michael, I'm going to start with you on this. According to Spiceworks in this article, they said that the devices, WPA3 devices, will not be available until 2019-ish, early 2019. When you're talking to your clients and you're starting to look at Wi-Fi, is this something where in the corporate environment, you're going to start suggesting, you know, hey, let's take a look at this? It obviously depends on the installation and the client base that you're dealing with, whether it's a financial institution or somebody else. But is this something where you want some certain folks to jump on as soon as a product is available, or is this something you're going to keep watching, and as products are kind of vetted and mature, then you're going to go to this?
So that definitely depends on the client, right? You've got those early adopters who are like, give me the latest and greatest on everything. And then you have those folks that really want to test and vet every piece of technology that comes out. For those that are working in more secure environments, we tend not to roll out stuff immediately unless there's a very imminent security risk, because it needs to be vetted, tested, verified before it goes into that environment. These new devices are going to start rolling out in 2019. It really comes down to what's going to be supported, how quickly they can get on site, how quickly the client can put them through their penetration testing before we're going to be able to deploy them, because they do have their protocol as well. So, you know, anytime it's going to be more secure with minimal effort to the client, we're going to definitely recommend that upgrade occur. Now, because this requires new devices, as long as you're still using good secure passwords on WPA2, it is very difficult to crack WPA2. If you're using something simple like an 8-character or less, even 10-character or less, it's easy to do a dictionary brute force attack and crack that. And you don't have to be attached to the network to do that. Literally, we could sit in Starbucks, capture all the traffic on that network, go home, use cloud computing, use all the power that's available to us on Amazon, and crack those passwords. When you start getting into 20 and 30 character passwords, just the economies of it get very, very difficult to crack, it, if not near impossible. So WPA2 is still a solid technology. So unless you need those security updates immediately, my recommendation is to wait until WPA3 is fully vetted and that the manufacturers have worked out all the details of the devices. Now, the difference in the protocol is really, really great from a security standpoint, because we're going from just a simple key exchange, from a simple four-way handshake to a multi-way key exchange, so that every handshake has to have a key exchange with it. So it's not like a brute force attack is even going to work in the future. That becomes completely obsolete as we move forward.
Yeah, Paul, that actually brings us back to the last story. It's something like this. And again, I'm talking about Wi-Fi here, so the connection is very tenuous here. But something like this, when you guys start talking about, you know, we're talking about, you know, transmitting information and you know, you guys as Aurora have been working on not wireless video technology, but, you know, network layer technology and sending AV over the network. Is this something where you guys, whether as a corporation and you know, putting it into your systems or working with the technology to make sure that what you guys are using it is most secure? What do you guys look at when you look at the next generation of secure networking, the next generation of security?
Well, at least for the AV over IP, it's a few things. It's not just the security. Believe it or not, the security is at least for the majority of the jobs, are not as critical as people would think they are. I mean, most of the time when you're doing any corporation that truly wants security, or if it's a government, they're going fiber anyway. And they want everything just landline. And personally, I love fiber, and that's the way I always try to go in any environment for security, when you're really worried about security. Other than that, if it's like a K-12 or a digital signage, no one cares if they're hacking into a Applebee's or something like that because they're doing digital signage over Wi-Fi and they got a channel that they can get at their house. So you got to kind of weigh the application and where it's being used. Most government facilities usually get scared to use Wi-Fi. And if you do use Wi-Fi, it's once again segmented systems that are meant to do simple things like pushing a button on a touch panel. Added security is always welcome. I mean, look at HDCP. They came out with 2.0 and it was cracked in very quickly, and then they came out with 2.1 and then that was cracked. And then they came out with 2.2 and then it created incompatibility with 2.0 and 2.1. So me personally, wait for it to be vetted. You never know. Usually in a few months, somebody finds a way to crack it and make everybody miserable. It's just the way it goes. And then they'll come out with some patch or something that makes it a little more secure. So I've seen that happen too many times in this industry. But you know, as far as security goes, most of the people that I deal with, at least, if they're really truly trying to be secure, they're going fiber anyway. They're not even touching the Wi-Fi. And for, once again, for just the other applications, it really depends on the application. What I care more about in our world is throughput and latency and how many simultaneous connections, prioritizations, things of that nature. So when you're shooting AV over IP, you got to realize this, and you've seen it a lot. In order to make it practical, there's different types of and this goes back to applications. You're doing digital signage, time is relative. It doesn't matter. You could have a 10-second delay. Who cares? It's 10 seconds relative to when you started watching it.
Yeah.
You're using a PC where you're moving the mouse. Time matters. And now you're actually, you need low latency. And you got to be really under 4 frames of latency or you really start to see a lag. And you got to remember the TV screen's already adding in at least a good frame or two of latency. So for me, with the Wi-Fis and these protocols, it's about latency and bandwidth. It's really for AV over IP where really people go after first and foremost, more so than security.
All right. Bradford, this is we've been living with WPA2, which is obviously the predecessor that we have now, for about 10 years. Is this a solution that we needed right now, or is this just the IEEE's saying, okay, let's, and the Wi-Fi Alliance saying, you know, this is just the next generation and it's ready for prime time?
This is something we need right now. It's also going to have some hamstrings, and it's also only one part of a security solution. The reason we need it right now is what Paul talked about, someone being able to sit at Applebee's and get onto the network and control stuff. Well, that's a simple thing. Remember, Vegas casinos have been hacked by fish tank controllers as their point in. Target was hacked by the refrigeration control system as the way into the network. So you need to secure your doors. And this is a way to secure a door. It does not do anything miraculous. It makes it a more secure door. It also helps encrypt your data while it's in transit. It does not encrypt your data while it's at rest. So that's why I say it's part of the solution. It also doesn't do anything with, say, letting you onto the server. All it's doing is letting you connect to a Wi-Fi point, which is probably connected to Ethernet. So it's just one more lock in the system. You still need to set up access control. You still need to encrypt your data on the server. You still need to do all this other stuff, and every hole matters. The other thing I think is going to become problematic to some people is this math is not easy. It's not hard, but it's not easy, and it's going to require calculations and clock cycles, which is going to drain batteries. It's that trade-off, as the more secure your encryption gets, the harder the math gets, at which point your processor runs more. I agree with Paul. You go fiber, you go hardwired connection for additional security in a physical plant, but you have to secure all the holes, and this is one of the ways to secure a hole just to connect to that Wi-Fi point. You still have to secure your data and your network infrastructure, whether it be using VPN once you're connected to connect back to your office, or just access lists on the switch to keep certain MAC addresses out. That's part of it. It is a step in the right direction. It's going to require more effort to crack. It is a key exchange, which means it is a constantly twisting and changing item. But to Paul's point, in 6 months, there's going to be a man in the middle attack or device in the middle attack that's going to make this all moot. Mm-hmm. But I would rather keep moving the goalposts and look at security as a journey and not a destination, which all too often companies look at it as, rather than not doing anything.
It's a cat and mouse. It's the cat and mouse game. I mean, it's a constantly evolving issue. And, you know, Bradford makes a very solid point that it is layered, right? So if we're talking about Wi-Fi by itself, yeah, you need to do it, but it is part of an overall security protocol, right?
All right. That'll be a good way to end it, guys. Thank you so much. Mr. Michael Drainer from Drainer Technologies, how do people find you?
DrainerTechnologies.com.
All right, very good. Mr. Bradford Benn, thank you as always, sir. How do people get a hold of you if they are so inclined?
My pleasure. Being that I'm Tim's boss, just email Tim at avnation.tv and I'll read his email. Or you can do Bradford at avnation.tv, usually where I'm hanging out. You should follow me instead of Tim because he's already on the Twitters at Bradford Benn because Tim's already complaining about both the Cubs, the Bears, and the Cardinals all at once.
I don't complain about the Cubs. The Cubs can do what they want. We're a Cardinal household, so... also, Mr. Harris, thank you, sir. How do people find you and or Aurora Multimedia?
Well, with our new security, you can't find us. We are incognito.
Very nice.
So you can find us at auroramm.com.
All right. Very good. Bradford's right. Don't follow me because the Bears have about 6 weeks before they're officially out of the playoffs. Go by the website if you would, please. Bradford and a whole lot of other folks spend a whole lot of time on it. Avnation.tv. Avnation.tv. You will find this program and a host of others. Also, our two weekly programs, AV Week and Resi Week, looks at the weekly news for the residential side and the commercial AV side. Also, while you're there, check out our underwriter section. These are the folks who help us financially and help us bring you ITAV, AV Week, Infocom a month ago, and Cedia in about 2 months. So all that and more at avnation.tv, avnation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. This has been the ITAV Show.